evening. That's so far behind, because we haven't gotten that far ahead, so we're... We had class. And by the way, for anybody who wants, if we ever miss a class, they are on the Shul website. You can...
Right.
It's not the same. I will agree it's not the same.
Sounds like a monotone.
But we missed.
Yeah, it's harder than in a class. That's true. But nonetheless, it still gives you an option to catch up if you need to or if want to. Quick review, or I'll give you review sheets as next week. I'll do the next set of review sheets. I gave out the review sheets on the first six chapters, and every couple of chapters I'll give you the next installment of the review pages. No, that was a source page that I gave. I wonder if I have any extras. No, I don't have. We'll get them to you.
Will you discuss at all how he sometimes describes both God and woman as the same?
Been there and done that.
Oh, done that.
I gave him a one sentence.
Oh, one sentence. No, we're past that. We've been there and done that. If you would like afterwards, I'll be happy to review that. But in the meantime, a couple of housekeeping items. Next week, for next week only, we're going to shift the time frame of the shiur. I'm going to condense the shiur a little bit, and we're going to run the shiur from 8:30 to 9:30. So we're going to start 20 minutes later to accommodate the time, the Zionada dinner, for those who have a conflict. So please be aware that next week we start at 8:30, and then we'll go back to our regular time table the week following. And of course, you're all invited to the Zion on the dinner. All right, we were in the middle of a discussion of Perek Chet. We had not finished, so for the sake of bringing everybody up to speed and making sure that we're all holding at the same place, I'm going to do a quick review of the piece that we have that we looked at last week, starting with the beginning of Perek Chet. Beginning of Perek Chet, chapter 8. מי כהחכם ומי יודע פשע דבר, חוכמת אדם תאיר פניו ועוז פניו ישונה. The Chacham, in response to the array, declares, the array who rejected the wisdom of the Chacham, compared the wisdom of the Chacham to the wisdom of, personified by the bad woman of the harlot, to which the Chacham says, who is like the Chacham, who knows the resolution of the matter? Wisdom illuminates the face, and then in an interrupting response, the Yirei Elokim grabs the microphone back and he says, Ani, I am like or even better than the Chacham. Don't interrupt me, it's my turn, I'm speaking, keep your distance. And then he moves on. Pi melech shmor ve'al divrat shvuat Elokim. Guard the word of the king and the matter of the oath of the king. Al tibehel mipanav telech. Do not be hasty to run or to walk from his presence. Al ta'amod b'davara. Do not stand in an evil thing. Ki kol ashiyachpot yaseh. God will do whatever he desires. Vasher dvar melech shilton umi amar lo mataseh. God's the word of the king is mastery, is authority, and who is going to instruct him as to what to do. Shomer mitzvah lo yeda davara. One who observes the commandments will not know a evil thing. Ve'eitu mishpat yeda lev chacham. The wise heart will know a time for everything and a judgment. Kilachol chayfetz yesh et umishpat. For every matter there is time and judgment. Kidaat ha'adam raba alav. Because man's evil is great, there is need for judgment. Kenenu yodem ma sheyeh ki kashe yeh miyagid lo. Man does not know what will be. The future is unknown. En adam shalit baruach lichloat ruach. Man cannot contain the spirit, can't have a mastery or authority over the spirit. Ve'en shilton b'yom ha'mavet. There is no authority over the day of death. Ve'en mishlachat b'milchama. There is no messenger in war. Ve'lo yimalet resha et ba'alav. And the wicked will not escape its master. Kol zera'iti v'natonat libi l'chom ma'aseh asher nasa tachat ha'shamesh et asher shalat ha'adam ha'adam lera lo. Man has established a hierarchy of evil, man over man, for his own detriment. That, we said, is the response of the Yirei Elokim. We had started an analysis of that response. We will continue it in a moment. But I want to just finish first the next piece. The Chacham. Again, we had suggested in our analysis last week that this piece, this chapter, is a back and forth between the Yirei and the Chacham. Almost as if they're both trying to speak at the same time. We saw it in the opening passage. You see it again here. Uvechein ra'iti resha'im kvurim vavau. Therefore I see wicked men buried and coming. Umimkom kadosh yalechu. Walking from a holy place. Vishtakhu be'ir asher ken asu. That which they have done in the city, these wicked men, has been forgotten. Gam zahavel. This is vanity. Asher ein asa pitkam maseh ra'a mehera. It is because justice or retribution over the evil is not done quickly. Al kein male lev b'nei ha'adam b'hem la'sotra. That's when man is encouraged to do evil. Precisely because there is no quick, decisive judgment. Asher chotei oseh ra ma'at u'ma'arich lo. A man can do sin 100-fold and gets away with it. God is patient with him. To which the Yirei Elokim responds mid-sentence, No, ki gam yodea ani asher yetov li Yirei Elokim, it will be good for the one who fears God, asher yiru milefanav v'tov lo yiyah l'rasha, it won't be good for the wicked, v'lo yarich yamim katzel, his days won't be prolonged like a shadow, asher enenu yareh milifnei Elokim, the one who does not fear God. And this debate ends with a kind of a back and forth over perception. Is there a system of reward and punishment, or isn't there? We'll come back to that piece of it momentarily. We began with a comparison of the words of the Yirei Elokim. We focused specifically on Psukim Bet through Chet, or through Tet, the Yirei Elokim, and we compared his words to his message in chapter 5, the first time we heard the Yirei Elokim speak. If anybody didn't get a source page from last week, there are extras here. I see a few hands up. Okay, so we'll just take them and pass them back. Just two more. They're coming back. Just take one and pass them back. Yeah, they're coming. There's coming. Essentially, the chart on the bottom of the page was our analysis. We said that there are four themes that parallel the Yirei Elokim's message in chapter 5 and the Yirei Elokim's message in chapter 8. They were, on the one hand, obedience. In chapter 5, the Yirei Elokim spoke about obedience to the neder, to the oath that you make. Al ta'achel l'shamo, if you make an oath, you had better fulfill it. The obedience to your own word. And here he speaks about Shvuat Elokim, an obedience to the oath of God, the oath that God has defined or bound us by. In chapter 5, he spoke about the notion of critique, of critiquing God. He said, Al ken yudvarecha me'atim, you're not allowed to critique God. You have to keep your words few. And here again, he talks about v'amelech shilton, the matter of the king is law. God's word is mastery. Mi yomar lo ma ta'aseh? Who is going to tell God what he can do? Similarly, with regards to the concept of mishpat, of judgment, of ultimate accountability, Back in chapter 5, the Yireh Elokim declared, Al titma lechefetz, do not be dismayed at the matter. If you see oppression and thievery, im oshek rash vegezel, tireh bamdina, al titma lechefetz, because gavog me'al gavoh shomer, there's a hierarchy of accountability, and man will do his part, and God will do his part. In chapter 8, he speaks about l'chol chayfetz yesh et umishpat, kira'at adam abalav, God will bring everything into judgment, everything will stand before God in judgment in the end. And finally, there was a hierarchy that Kohelet spoke about in chapter 5, a hierarchy of man and God, the king and the king of kings, gavoh mi'al gavoh. In chapter 8, he also speaks of a hierarchy of sorts, although the contrast, the negative hierarchy of the rule of man over man, asher shalat ha'adam ba'adam liralo. Those are in terms of themes and general structure. Clearly in chapter 5 he was addressing the Amal, and therefore his focus was on the Amal himself. He was talking to an individual who was attempting to control the world, master the world, and whose frustrations were emanated from his desire to direct the world to his own for his own purposes, or to establish his own legacy. And so Kohelet's message, or the Yireh Elokim's message, was contextualized there to say to the Amal, if you're going, don't speak so much, don't be so haughty, don't be so angry all the time, don't think that you are in control of the world. You have to learn to relax. You're not in control of the world. Ultimately, God is in control. You have a role, you have a part, but ultimately, God is controlling the world as well in a kind of partnership. Here, he's not speaking to the Yireh Elokim, he's speaking to the Chacham. And so the message, while the same message is conveyed, it's couched in a very different style and a very different message. He starts with the notion of obedience to the word of God, precisely because he is talking to the Chacham. And the Chacham, at the core of the Chacham's message, is the fact that we are exploring the world with our own intellect, and we will draw whatever conclusions our intellect leads us to. We have that ability and that right and that autonomy. The Chacham, the concept of the Chochmah that is divorced or disconnected from any kind of faith or any kind of predetermined axiomatic positions of Yirat Elokim, is precisely what differentiates, in the words of Mishle, the good woman from the evil woman, the Chochmah that is Chochmah Kshera, Chochmah that is rooted in Yirat Elokim, versus Chochmah that is disconnected from the source, Chochmah that is roaming the streets, the harlot in the metaphor of Mishle. So his first message is, which is the binding nature of the oath, Dvuat Pi Melech Shmor V'Al Divrat Shvuat Elokim, guard the word, the oath of the king. It's a way of saying to the Chacham, we are bound by a fundamental relationship with God that goes beyond your and my Chochmah. And therefore, that's certainly a relevant message to the Chacham. It defines the essence of the difference in their methodology. That's where we left off when we got to Pasuk Gimel. Al ta'amod b'davara ki l'chol ki kol asher yachpotz ya'aseh. So al tivehel mipanav telech, al ta'amod b'davara. Do not be hasty to walk or to go from his presence. Do not stand in the evil thing. What does al ta'amod, al tibahel mipanav telech mean? What is the context? Do not be hasty to go from his presence. What does that mean? Excuse me? Don't sin. The second half of that corollary is al tibahel mipanav, al ta'amod b'davara. Don't do anything negative because... What's the relationship between these two phrases? Because he's always present. You can never escape his eyes. Right? Of course, you know the joke about the child who was looking at a buffet of food and At one corner of the table, there was a pile of apples, and there was a sign that somebody had put there and says, you know, don't touch the apples, God is watching. And he took a piece of paper. On the other end of the table, there was a plate of cookies. So he took a piece of paper and he scribbled on it and he put it in front of the cookies and it said, take as many as you want, God is watching the apples. It's an old one. There is the notion that don't sin because God is watching and he knows where we are and what we do and everything that we and you can never escape his presence. Sefer Yonah was built on the axe. Sefer Yonah is structured around that principle that you can't escape God's presence. Yonah tries to run. He can't run. God runs after him. There are two prakim in Tehillim which focus specifically on that message. Two prakim in Tanakh which focus specifically on that message. One in Tehillim and one in Iyov. The difference between them is very interesting and relevant to our discussion in our continuation of this discussion. If you turn the page over, you have two chapters that I've put on the source page. One is Tehillim Kuf Lamed Tet, and the other is Iyov Perek Yud. Tehillim Kuf Lamed Tet says as follows. Amnatzeach leDavid Mizmor Hashem Chakartani Vateda. The chief musician, Psalm of David, you have searched me, Chakartani Vateda, and you know me. Tayadati Shivti Vakumi Bantalera Imir Achok. You know when I sit down, you know when I rise up, you know, you understand my thoughts, Mirachok, from far away. Orchi Vidivi Zerita. You have measured my going and my lying down. Called Rachai Hiskanta, you are acquainted with all my ways. There is no word in my tongue that you do not know. Pasuk Hey, Achor Vakedem Tzartani, you have beset me or created me behind and before. Batashet Alai Kapecha, you have placed your hand upon me. Meaning? What's David HaMelech referring to? What's he describing in such poetic and flowery language? Achor v'kedem tzaitani, you have beset me behind and before. No, I don't think he's talking about protection. I think he's talking about something much more profound.
Is this possible unity before I was created?
Yeah. Before I was created. You created me. You formed me. You were there. You were there, behind me, Kedem, time of old. Pliadat mimeni. Such knowledge is too wondrous for me. Niskavalo chala, I can't possibly understand what that means. And therefore there's a conclusion. Ana elech meruchecha v'ana mipanecha evrach. Where shall I go from your spirit? Where shall I flee from your presence? There's nowhere to go. You created me, you formed me, where am I going to go? And if you literally, imesak shamayim, shamata. If I go up to the heavens, there you are. Vatziya sha'ol, ineka. If I just want to go down to the grave, there you are. Esak kanfei shachar, I'll go and grow wings and fly into the sky. Eshkena b'achrit yam, I should go to the across and in the to the ends of the sea. There too your hand will guide me. Your right hand will support me. Even at night, even in darkness, the light will enlighten me. Your light will guide me. Darkness will not hide from you. The night will be illuminated like daytime. Kiata kanita chilyotai tesukeni beveten imi. Because you have formed my insides, you knit me together in my mother's womb. In the moment of creation, there you were. How could I possibly escape you when you put me together and put me in this world? And therefore his conclusion, Odcha, al kinara ot nifleit niflaim asecha, I will therefore thank you, I will praise you, for you, I am so wonderfully made. The very act of creation to David HaMelech is this inspiration He cannot possibly escape God's presence. Wherever he is, God is with him from the moment of the of his formation in the womb until Gam ki elech beget samavet, even if I walk in the valley of the shadow of death. The final verses of this parak, Chokreni el veda levavi, mechaneni veda sarapai, search me, know my heart, God, test me, know my thoughts. Ure'eyim derech otsev biyunecheni bederech olam, and see if there's any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. In other words, in the end of this parak, David HaMelech turns to God and says, if that's the case, instead of trying to run away from God, the solution is to run to God. And let the very fact that God that you can't escape God serve as a means of guiding me in the right path and in the right, in the closeness to God. That's David HaMelech, and that's Perek Tehillim, Perek Kuf Lamed Tet. Iov draws the very same facts, looks at the very same phenomena. You can't escape God. Iyov Perek Yud. Yadecha itzvuni. Your hands have made me. Ve'yasuni yachad saviv batvaleini. They have fashioned me. Yet you turn around to destroy me. Remember, I beseech you that you have made me out of clay and you will bring me back to dust. You poured me like milk and curdled me like cheese. Describing the exact same process as David HaMelech, correct? Namely, right, that you created me. Or uvasar talbisheni, ubatzamot vigidim tisachacheni. You clothed me with skin and flesh. You knit me together with bones and sinews. Chaim bechesed asita imadi. You gave me life and favor. Ufkudatcha shamra ruchi. Your providence has preserved my spirit. And therefore, ve'ele tzafanta bilvavecha yadati kizot imach. And these things have you hidden in your heart. I know that this is with you. Namely, im chatati ushmartani umeyavonai lotanakeni. If I sin, you mark me, and you will not acquit me of my iniquity. Im rashati, if I am wicked, alalali, woe is me. Vitzadakti lo esaroshi, sva kalon ure'e onyi. Yet I will not lift up my head, for I am filled with disgrace, and I see my affliction. If my head is lifted proudly, you hunt me down like a lion and again work wonders against me. You renew your witnesses against me. You increase your indignation against me. You bring fresh armies against me. Why then have you brought me forth from the womb that I had perished and no woe that I had perished and no eye had seen me? Says Iov, you can't escape God. He made me. He made me. He knows every sinew and every part of my body and every bone knows my kishkas inside and out. And therefore, the result is, the conclusion is, what's Eov's conclusion? From the same facts, Eov and Tehillim are looking at exactly the same phenomenon. God has made me from the womb. Therefore, to David HaMelech and Tehillim, the conclusion is, I will therefore run to God because I can. It's not possible to run away from God. To the Eov, he doesn't run away. He bemoans the fact that he can't run away. He's constantly angry. He's frustrated at the fact that every single little transgression, every time he stubs his toe spiritually, God is there to pounce on him. Obviously, there's a difference in. Why does he want to run? David doesn't want to run. David doesn't want to run. He's not looking to run. On the contrary, he's looking at the fact that God is so close to him because he very created him that he's He sees it as a mechanism for drawing me closer and guiding me, whereas Eov looks at the same phenomenon and he sees it as an opportunity, or he sees it as a threat to him that he can't possibly, it's like this constant in your face. God is in my face. Well, okay, I understand the difference between where David HaMelech is at and where Eov is at. Eov perceived that God was picking on him, and David perceived that God was challenging him. There's a difference. I understand the difference in the personalities. I'm not convinced that Eov had a harder life than David HaMelech. That's a discussion for another time. David HaMelech did not have an easy time of it by any stretch of the imagination. But here, if I come back to Kohelet, I ask the question as something we will come back to, is what is the theme here? What's the message here? You can't escape God, therefore don't sin. Right? It sounds very much like which model, Tehillim or Eov?
Eov.
That sounds very much like an Eov theme. You can't escape God's presence. You can't run. There's nowhere to run. Therefore, Al tamod b'davara. Or watch what you do. Right? Be very careful, because God is constantly watching. No, Eov didn't come to Eov took that as a fact. Now he was frustrated by it. Okay. The Kim of Kohelet comes to that as a conclusion. I guess you could say Eov picks up where Kohelet leaves off. But neither, but he's closer to that perception of it than Tehillim. There's a fundamental difference between them, and we'll come to what that difference is in a moment. But certainly there's that message. You can't escape God, therefore there's a responsibility that you have. Right? God's not watching the apples only, he's watching the cookies too. So, therefore, Al ta'mod b'davara. There's more to it than that, and that's where I wanted to get to next. That's sort of where we left off. We went a little bit further. But the real question is, what are we, when he says that there's nowhere to run, what are we trying to run from? Alti v'helmi panav telech. You can't escape God. Where would we be trying to escape God from? What is the Chacham, remember he's speaking to the Chacham. What is it about the ideological framework of the Chacham that was ever articulated as an attempt to escape from God's presence? So to understand that, we need to move a little bit further into the next couple of verses. Al tivahel mi panav telech leads right into Pasuk Dalet. Ba'asher dvar melech shilton. For the word of the king is mastery. Or mi omar lo mata aseh, who is possibly going to tell him what to do? Skip Pasuk Hey, because that goes back to the theme of those who observe the mitzvot and the mishpat that they will achieve. Go to Pasuk Zion. Ki einenu yodea mashiyeh ki kasher yeh mi agidlo. Man cannot know what will be. Ein adam shalit baruach lichlo at ruach. Man has no mastery. Man has no shilton. Who has shilton? Dvar melech shilton. Ein Adam Shalit Baruah. Shilton belongs to the king, king of kings. Adam has no shilton over the Ruach, over the spirit. What would you need shilton over the spirit? Lichlo et haruach, to contain the Ruach. Ve'en shilton v'yom hamavet. What does that mean? There is no authority on the day of death. So halachically, there's a notion that a person is lying on his deathbed. A melech doesn't have but I don't think that's what it means here. What does Ein Shilton B'Yom HaMavet mean? No authority on the day of death. Ain adam shalit baruach lichlo at haruach ve'ain shilton b'yom ha'mavet. What do these two statements have in common? What do they share? What is the message that connects them? Person cannot have authority or power over the spirit to contain the spirit, and there is no power on the day of death. Correct. There is no power on or over Yom HaMavet. There's no authority over death. There is no power over the spirit to contain the spirit. When the neshama leaves, it leaves. And no power on earth can stop it. Ein adam shalit baruach lichlo et haruach. You can't contain it. Ein shilton b'yom ha'mavet. There is no authority or power over the day of death. Who holds the keys to that power? Basher Dvar Melech Shilton. That power belongs only to the king. Ve'en mishlachat b'milchama. There is no delegation in peace. There is no delegation in war. Ve'en mishlachat b'milchama. I skip two verses in the middle. We'll come back to them. Ve'en mishlachat b'milchama. There is no delegation in war. What does that mean? When we have a delegation in war. If I put these phrases one underneath the other, I'm assuming that they all say the same thing. They're all structured the same way. Ein adam shalit baruach lichlo et haruach. Ein shalton yom ha'mavet. Ein mishlachat b'milchama.
What happens if you feel there is a delegation?
Let's see what it means, and we'll see whether you can. Whether it's, what does he say? Too broad. What does the metaphor refer to? What does the metaphor specifically address? What does the milchama here represent? That was a war. I don't think he was talking about the war in metaphorical terms. I think he was talking about a war. But what does the war here represent? These are three statements I think that parallel each other. This is not existentialism. This is milchama is war. And what happens in war?
People die.
In war, people die. Fact. Ein mishlachat b'milchama. There is no escaping the fact that in war, people die. There is no greater expression to the notion of ein shilton b'yom ha'mavet than in the middle of a battlefield. No will on earth is going to keep you alive when that bullet is headed straight for your heart. Not going to happen. Ein shilton b'yom ha'mavet. Ein mishlachat b'milchama. This is real as it gets. There is no escape from the existence of death. You can't ignore it. You can give me every philosophy in the world you want. But it's there, it's real, it's inescapable, it's every single person's destiny on this world. Ein shilton b'mamavet, ein mishlach b'muchama. Maybe if we had the Eitz HaChaim, but we don't have the Eitz HaChaim. And therefore, there's no escape. Al tipahel mi panav telech, said Kohelet, do not think you can escape from God. Why not? Because sooner or later, every human being is going to stand before God and meet his maker. It's a fact. You want to escape from God, you have to find a way to escape from this formula. And that's not doable. It's fascinating. The notion that death ultimately leads one to, or recognition of death, leads one straight to God. An interesting phenomenon. We are very well, we are keenly aware of that phenomenon. We have all kinds of ways of couching it in metaphor, you know, atheists in a foxhole. You know, we know countless Jews whose only connection to God and to spirituality is Kaddish and Kol Nidre. Or the time they put on the yarmulke when they walk into a cemetery. It's fascinating, and I can't tell you there's anything to do with Kohelet, but it's a fascinating observation that in Hebrew, a cemetery is called, has many names, based on Beit Olam, it's that one of the names of a cemetery is an Atra Kadisha. Atra Kadisha means a holy place. And the organization that is engaged in the work of the cemetery is called a Chevra Kadisha, but the place is called an Atra Kadisha. It's fascinatingly ironic because in Halacha and in the Torah, a cemetery is a place of Tumah. And you can't have a place of Tumah as a place of Kedusha. They're mutually exclusive. In Halacha, a cemetery is not a place of Kedusha, it's a place of Tumah. So where does the Kedusha emanate from? Maybe, just maybe, it emanates not from the place. The place is a place of Tumah. It emanates from the fact that there's no greater inspiration to Kedusha than taking a stroll through a cemetery. There's nothing more motivating to a person to recognize the destiny that he's going to have to face God than to come face to face with one's own mortality. And that's a concept that Kohelet struggles with, point blank. Al tibehel mipanav telech. You can never escape God. You know why? Ki ein adam shalit b'ruach. Sooner or later, you're going to stand before God. There is no escape. That was precisely the message of the story of Gan Eden. When man took the Eitz Hadaat, and God said, I'm taking away from you the Eitz Chaim. Pen yishlach yadov yachal me'etz ha'chaim v'chay li'olam. Because if he takes the Eitz Chaim, he lives forever. There's nothing to distinguish between man and God. There's nothing to teach man that he's man and not God. He's usurped the authority of the Eitz Hadaat. Mortality is a fundamentally important component of the message that we stand before God. There's a wild statement in the Medrash. Pasuk says that God saw everything he created and it was very good. That was at the end of creation, the very last day. So there's a medrash, a statement of Rabbi Meir, that Tov Me'od, what was the Me'od? What was the very good that was created at the end of creation that was distinct from the rest of creation, says Rav Meir? Death. Because without it, life becomes meaningless. An immortal life is a meaningless life. It's a fascinating issue. And that's essentially what he's saying. If you said ultimately, if you want to make sure that you recognize, Al tibehel mipanav telech, Al tamod davar ra, if you want to live a life that is a life of substance, of goodness, and you don't want to sin, then you have to recognize always that you will one day die and have to stand in an accounting before God. Like the Mishnah that says, Tachzor yom echad lifnei motcha. Do tshuva the day before you die, which the students ask the Rebbe. He says, but we never know when you die. He says, okay, so do tshuva today, blessed you die tomorrow. And you live every day in that perspective. That's Kohelet. That's essentially the core, the message of the Yirei Elokim.
But that approach is God doesn't get justice until you die.
Correct. 100%. 100%. So justice is at the time of death. Oh, we'll get there. We'll get to the get to the response of the Chacham. You're three psukim ahead of me, but you're 100% correct. That's exactly the response of the Chacham. The significance of the day of death, he goes one step further. Let's go to the end of that pasuk. V'lo yimalet resha et ba'alav. What happens at death? What happens when we've come to the conclusion that en adam shalit baruach pasuk, end of pasuk chet, man cannot contain the spirit, man cannot hold on to life in the day of death, en shilton b'yom ha-mavet, when there's no escape from the consequences of war, in mishlacha b'milchama. What are the consequences? V'lo yimalet resha et ba'alav. Man, the wicked will not escape its master. The wickedness will not escape its master. Every wickedness will find itself held accountable. It will meet its master. It's an interesting phraseology, right? Not the wicked will meet their creator, it's the wickedness that will meet their master. Resha will meet its ba'al. When? When it stands before God in judgment. And then, if you go back to the psukim that we skipped, you see that's exactly the message that he carries through in this whole section. Pasuk Dalet. Ba'asher dvar Bashir Dvar, go back to the beginning of the parak. Bashir Dvar Melech Shulton Umi Yomar Lo Ma Ta'aseh. The word of the king, referring to in this case, what is the Dvar Melech? What is the Dvar Melech in this parak? I carry it through. What is the Dvar Melech? Right, what word of the king are we talking about? The day of death, right? Bashir Dvar Melech Shulton, the day of that matter of the king, that decree of the king, is ultimate authority, Shulton. Umi yomar lo ma ta'aseh, and on that day, who is going to tell God what to do? Do you? You're going to stand before God and instruct God? Direct God into how that is all going to conclude? Think about the difference between where Eov is at and where Kohelet is at. Eov and Kohelet essentially come to the same conclusion. You can't escape God, therefore do not sin, because it's not good for you. Eov came to the conclusion from the perspective of the moment of birth. Kohelet comes to that conclusion from the perspective of the day of death. That moment when you come face to face, and therefore there really is no escape from God. And that's why he continues in those psukim that we skipped. Pasuk Hey, Shomer mitzvah lo yeda davar ra. One who observes the mitzvot will not know an evil thing. When? Right? When he stands before God in judgment. Ve'et u'mishpat yeda lev chacham. There will be a time and a judgment that will be known by every discerning, wise heart. Ki l'chol chayfetz yesh et u'mishpat. To every matter there is time and judgment. Ki ra'at ha'adam rabba alav. Man's evil is great upon him. There is judgment. Kohelet said it, and Yirei Elokim said it in Perek Hei, and he said it again here. In response to the Nehenez declaration back in Perek Gimel, where he said, L'chol zman ve'et l'chol chayfetz tachat ha-shamayim, when the Nehenet introduced to us the notion that to everything there is a time and judgment tachat ha-shamayim, under the heavens. The Chacham back in Perek Hey had said to the Amal, indeed, al titma l'chayfetz ki al gavo shamer, don't worry about the matter, there is judgment, there is hierarchy. Here he turns to the Chacham and he says, L'chol chayfetz, same phrase, same words. L'chol chayfetz, yesh, etu mishpat. To every chayfetz, there is judgment, with one fundamental difference. Fundamentally important. Different. In Perek Hey, when he talked about Mishpat, he was referring specifically to the Amal, and the Mishpat was when and where. The Yireh came in Perek Hey, back in the first half of the book. This Mishpat that he talked about in the hierarchy. Al titma lachefetz, don't worry. There is a judgment for everything. There is accountability. Why? Ki gavoh me'al gavoh shomer. There is accountability. There is judgment. When and where? In the kingdom, in this world. There's a hierarchy. There's an account. There's a partnership, man and God. In Perek Chet, ki lachol et u'mishpat yedah lev chacham. There is accountability. There is judgment. When and where? At the day of death. There is a mishpat before heaven. So his conclusion is the same. There is judgment. There is accountability before God. But there's a fundamental difference between them. Perek Hey talked about an accountability in this world and a judgment and a control in this world. In Perek Chet, he speaks about a mishpat. Etu mishpat, when and where, on the day of Ein Shelton B'Yom HaMavet, on the day when every person will meet their maker. So one of the questions we have to ask is what has happened in the Yirei Elokim's philosophy that in Perek Dalet he built this entire structure around the notion of God in control and accountability in this world, whereas in Perek Chet he's talking about the next world. That's an issue we'll have to address, and we'll come back to it hopefully before the end of today's shiur. By the way, at this point in the book, we've now seen each of the four personalities of Kohelet address the question of death. This is the last one we've been waiting for, the Yireh Elokim. We've had all three before, but now this is the fourth. They've addressed all kinds of issues, life, good, evil, but the concept of death and how we deal with the existence of death has been a sub-theme or subtext of the whole book. We now have a complete picture of the approach that each one takes. The approach of the Nehenneh from the very beginning, who's eating and drinking as if there's no tomorrow, is to... What does he do with death? Ignores it completely. Doesn't exist to him. Not relevant. The Amal? Ruins everything. Frustrated by it. He would like nothing more than to conquer it, destroy it, overcome it, eradicate it. The Chacham? Complete acceptance. Live with it. And therefore, life becomes insignificant and meaningless. A little bit of rishus, a little bit of tzidkus, a little bit of goodness, a little bit of wickedness, doesn't matter. So ultimately, everybody's going to die, so you might as well just do whatever you want to do. Just work through the road map. Don't be too righteous, because boring life, don't be too wicked because you'll self-destruct, a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but death is really irrelevant. Death is kind of this, it's not irrelevant, it's very relevant, it's kind of this overpowering institution that destroys the meaning of everything I do, and therefore kind of just maneuver through it, resign yourself to that kind of subpar existence. The Yireh Elokim, specifically to the Chacham, and we'll talk about that in a moment, the Yireh Elokim says, what do I do with death? Remember it always, keep it in mind always, but for a purpose. The Chacham also said, better to go to a funeral than to a house of feasting, for a different purpose, for a different reason. To the Chacham, it was because you realize how meaningless it all is. To the Yireh Elokim, essentially, death is a necessary part of the process. It's a part of the journey. To the Chacham, the world stops at death. Existence stops at death. There's nothing beyond. And if there's nothing beyond, that's it. The story ends here. The Yirei Elokim is introduced to the storyline for the first time, the notion that there is something beyond that moment. There is an eight, there is a mishpat. There's an accountability before God. There's a ruach. V'yashov ha'afar el ha'aretz k'sheya v'aruach tashuv el ha'lokim asher netana, says the Yirei Elokim at the end of the end of the book. There's a ruach. There's an immortality of the soul. That's a whole new concept. It's a variable that has not been in the discussion up until now. To the Yirei Elokim, death is a tool to be valued, put into context, and live one's life in a more meaningful fashion because of it. Take advantage of it, transform it from a negative into a positive as far as the life that we lead here. So from a methodological point of view, those are our four approaches to the question of how we deal with it. Going through the back of my mind, and I don't have enough information to work it through the text, but I sort of get an intuitive sense that these four personalities are actually at four different stages of life, almost like four different ages, from youth to old age. The young, energetic, or the nehne is almost childish. The Amal is young and energetic and trying to change the world. The Chacham is a little wiser, a little older, a little more philosophical and contemplative. And the Yirei Elokim is sitting on in his old age and recognizing the value of time for accountability before God. It's almost an age difference between each of these four personalities. I don't have enough evidence of the text to work that one through, but that's just for information purposes. Which brings us to Pasuk Tet or Pasuk Yud. And Pasuk Tet, I said, could go either way, but if we assume that it's the Yirei Elokim still speaking, he's contrasting the hierarchy of God and man in chapter 5 with the hierarchy of man over man and the evil that man besets against man in this world that he will ultimately have to give accountability to. Which brings us to Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Yud is back to our friend the Chacham. Uvechein. Interesting word, right? Uvechein. Kind of reminds me of Rosh Hashanah. Uvechein reiti rishaim kvurim vavau. I have seen the wicked buried and coming. Umemakom kadosh yihalechu. And they come from a holy place. And all that they have done in the city is forgotten. What does that mean? Rishaim kvurim vavau. Can I erase this? What does Rishaim kvurim vavau mean? The wicked, buried and coming. How do you be buried and coming? Buried and coming. Rishaim kvurim vavau. So I can understand the two ways. Number one, I can understand it as kvurim vavau. Vavau could mean like a description of a ongoing verb, past tense. They keep getting buried. Rishaim kvurim vavau. They get buried and on and on and on, keep getting buried. One way of translating it. Another, how do they translate it there?
Come to their rest.
Come to their rest. Backwards. All right, possibly. Other possibility is Rishaim Kvurim. I see the wicked buried. And then move on. And then they come back. Newly come, right? Whatever that means. And they come back. Umimakom kadosh yahalechu. Remember these two halves of the phrase have to be parallel, because that's biblical Hebrew. So if they're buried and coming, they're coming from a makom kadosh. What's the makom kadosh? The place where they are buried. Atra kadisha. What's an atra kadisha? A cemetery. So these Rishaim are coming from the cemetery and they are spatsiering around. They're coming and going. And everything that they did in the city, meaning all of their wickedness, is forgotten. What are we talking about? What are we talking about?
There's always wickedness.
The Chacham's response to the Yirei Elokim. The thesis of the Yirei Elokim is every wicked person will meet their judgment, will meet their maker, and they will be accountable before God. When? Says the Chacham, you know what? I see a lot of dead people walking around. I see a lot of dead, wicked people walking around. Enjoying life. What are you talking about? Every wicked person is going to meet their end, is going to stand before God in judgment? So where are all these wicked people? Dead, buried, stood before God in judgment, and now they're back? And all their wickedness forgotten? Comes a hafa. It's one of the most cynical critiques in the text. Pure satire. Cynicism. Rishaim kvurim bava. All these wicked people. They're all walking around. And what's the Yirei Elokim's response? Okay, there's wicked people walking around, that's fine. Not to worry, they will all meet their maker. They will all stand before God in judgment. When? Bis 120. A long time to wait. That's a long time to wait. I gotta wait for Bin Laden to reach 120? And that's.
Does it possibly mean that even though they're walking around, the others that are alive don't respect them?
He says exactly what it means. He translates this metaphor in the next verse. Asher ein na'asa pitgam ma'aseh hara'ah mehera. Precisely because the judgment is against the wicked is not done quickly, al kein male lev bnei adam la'asot ra. That's why man's heart continues to do evil. That's exactly what you said before. Because they're not judged until 120. Who thinks about death at the age of 15? Or the age of 20? How many people at the age of 25 write a will? You want to talk about mishpat. You want to talk about judgment before God as a mechanism of judgment, as God's retribution, as a system of reward and punishment? In the meantime, I got a lot of wicked people who you claim should be dead, who meet their maker, who can't control the spirit, and they're all standing and walking around enjoying life. And because your mishpat, your glorious, wonderful mishpat, doesn't happen until 120, in the meantime, lev b'nei adam l'asot ra. Man's heart is inclined to do more evil and more evil because there's no accountability. Because where's God? Waiting until the angel tombi yom amavet, waiting until en mishlacha pe mochama, waiting until the day of death. There's wicked people in this world. And if God wants a system of reward and punishment, you have to intervene. Because otherwise, it looks like nothing.
Yeah, the Yirei Elokim was right. So the Chacham could say, you say there's no judgment. You're telling me there's going to be something after death. Can you point to somebody who said, you know, tell me
I'm wrong. So he could argue the substance of it. He could argue, I don't believe you argument. But I think his argument is much more profound. It's not an I don't believe you argument. It's l'datcha, l'shitatcha. It's an argument, okay, I'll take your word for it. But now think about what you're suggesting for a moment. And think through the logic of it. It was exactly your question to me. And your question to me before wasn't, I don't believe you. Your question to me was, well, if the judgment's going to wait till 120, so what's to deter evil now? It's a much more profound critique. And it's an issue that has to be addressed. You can't ignore that issue. That's a real question. How does God run a world, allow the evil to perpetrate itself from year after year after year with no involvement, with simply on the argument that, oh, there's a judgment of the world to come, it'll all get sorted out. And what gets left in this world? Chaos. He could have said, I don't believe you. But this is a much more profound argument. And he takes it one step further, and he says this quite clearly, verse 12, man does evil 100-fold, and his days are prolonged, and he gets away with it. So great, so there's a mishpat after 120. What difference is it going to make in the world that we live in? How is that going to have any significance in terms of deterring evil here? Righteousness, it's like, there's a system of righteousness. How? After 120, everybody gets the just desserts, a level playing field. But righteousness, justice has to be perceived, not just done. It has to be an understandable, recognizable system of reward and punishment that people can understand. Can you imagine a society in which people were told that if they commit murder, when they die, right, they won't have a burial? Imagine society that people should be told that the punishment for committing murder is that we won't put a matzeva on your grave. Right? You'd have anarchy. You'd have anarchy. What are we saying to a person? We say that they can do all kinds of terrible things in this world. When they die, they'll come to the banish law, and the banish law will deal with it. And in the meantime, they can do whatever they want, and the world looks on, and young people look on, and others look on, and all they see is, Ashechoteo se ram atu marichlo, gets away with it. And that's the fundamental argument of the Chacham, is that we live in a world where, with the system of reward and punishment that you've described, Yirei Elokim, you said it yourself, Mishpat. When? Mishlacha b'mochama. The day of death. And in the meantime, so the Yirei Elokim responds. Ki gam yodea ani, verse 12 in the middle. Ki gam yodea ani, asheye tov li Yirei Elokim, asheye rumu lefanav, vetov lo yeh l'rasha, I know that that the ones who fear God, it will be good for them, and good will not come to the wicked ones, and they will not prolong the days like the shadow, those who do not fear God. What's his answer to the Chacham? I don't see it. You think that the wicked goes unpunished? I don't see it. The wicked lives prosperous? I don't see it. I see the righteous get a good reward, and the wicked get it. They won't prolong their days. The Chacham says, the sinner will prolong his days 100-fold. And the Chacham says the sinner will not prolong his days. So which is it? Crime pays or doesn't pay? Oh, does I? Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. Exactly right. In other words, the ultimate, the conclusion at the end of this debate between the Chacham and the Yirei Elokim is the cup half full, is the cup half empty. There's no resolution to this debate. They're both looking at the same world, they're just drawing opposite conclusions. The Yirei Elokim is the ultimate optimist. He looks at all of those instances where the perpetrators are punished, and where the God intervenes to set the world straight and to punish the wicked. And there are many such instances. And the Chacham is looking at all of those cases where the perpetrator is allowed to escape ad infinitum. And there are many such cases. A resolution to that question we will not have. But that's the level of the debate. That's why the debate keeps going back and forth so much, because they're no longer arguing about substance. Now it's a question of perception. Is it or isn't it? And the answer is it's both. The answer is it's both. Yes, yes, absolutely. Without question. He said it in chapter 5. That's exactly the point. He can't retract from that position. He said it in chapter 5. And that's the key in understanding what the Yirei Elokim has done here. It is the position of the Navi, whether it be Moshe Rabbeinu, whether it be Yirmiyahu, whether it be any of the Nevi'im, it is the position of Tanakh as a whole, that God intervenes in the world around us, and that God will punish the perpetrator, the evil. That is the position of the Navi. The Navi cannot, and it's, I've shown you various examples over the course of the year, and the Navi per Navi can't accept the notion that God would allow evil to exist in this world without some kind of retribution or involvement, because the result is only more evil. That's exactly Yonah's issue. If you don't punish Nineveh, there will be 3 more Ninevehs by next year. So you've forgiven Nineveh because they did some kind of half-baked tshuva. And what happens next year when the next city looks at Nineveh and says, you see, they got away with it? When Yirmiyahu cries out to God and he says, Madu derech v'sha'im tzalecha, why is the wicked prosper? You can't accept that phenomenon, because all it does is increase the possibility that there will be more evil in the world. The reality is that somewhere between the Chacham and the Yirei Elokim, they're both right. There are instances where God does intervene, and there are instances where God does not intervene. What the Yirei Elokim essentially is saying is that we have, and this is, I think this is the key, is that we have a two-pronged approach. We have a two-tiered system. To the Amal, back in Perek Dalet, the Amal was focused completely and totally on an understanding of the operation in this world as if he is in total control. And so to the Amal, the Yirei Elokim's response is, you are not in total control. God has a role in this picture. Here, right now, in this world. The Chacham's perspective was that death is the end of the journey. And because death is the end of the journey, it destroys whatever meaning life has. So to the Chacham, the Yirei says, death is not the end of the journey. And if you're looking for meaning, there is meaning to life dafka because death stands in the way. And therefore, A, our lives are limited, and that gives it value, and B, there is accountability on the other side. But to the Yirei Elokim, there's a two-tier system. Level one, when we talk about Tzchar V'Onesh, we talk about reward and punishment. We talk about retribution. We talk about God's involvement in the world. What is the first level of Schar V'Onish that the Tanakh focuses on? When the Torah describes, the Torah defines the system of reward and punishment. What is it? This world or the next world? This world. And the focus of that system of reward and punishment? What are the mechanisms? What are the building blocks? What is the operational system of how it works?
The rain comes in when it's supposed to.
Right, there's rain and there's interaction, there's divine providence. What you have is a nation of Israel, and you have a Torah that they have to operate by, and you have a land of Israel that essentially becomes your living, breathing barometer of the spiritual status of the Jewish people. You have a kingdom of Israel, and in that kingdom of Israel you have a melech, and you have a melech, malchei ha-melechim, and you have a partnership of gavoa me'al gavoa, and you have mishpat, and man is responsible for ensuring that good is rewarded and evil is punished, and when man fails to do that, God will intervene at some point as well. And all of that is supposed to function, ideally, in this world. Question. Is it a foolproof system? Does it catch everybody? By no means. And because it's not a foolproof system, and because it doesn't catch everybody, there is a tier two. And tier two is... a judgment in the world to come. And what essentially the Yirei Elokim says to the Chacham is, don't think that just because you see Rasha'im Kfurim Vavo, you see these wicked people running around, that this system has broken down. Don't think that there's chaos. On the contrary, Lo Yimalet Resha Et Ba'alav, from this system, no one is immune. From this second tier, this safety net, no one can escape. That's the message of the Yirei Elokim. Here he adds part two, level two. No one escapes this system. Ein shelton b'yom ha'mavet. Ein mishlacha b'mochama. Ein adam shalit paruach l'chloat haruach. There's no escape this system. Yesh etu mishpat. There is judgment here. But it's not to replace the judgment, the mishpat b'olam hazeh. It's not to replace level one. Everything that he spoke about in chapter 4, the hierarchy, the system, the focus on this world that Tanakh is so focused on. It's to add one level of mishpat beyond, to make sure that even though this system is national, and by its very nature, if the system is national, by its very nature, it will not reach everybody. Because it's global and it's national. Therefore, the individual mishpat is here. Lo yimalet resha et ba'alav. This is individualistic. This mishpat, every individual. Ein adam shalit baruach l'chloat ruach. No one escapes. Schar ve'onesh in this world is national, global. Can't reach everybody. Nationalistic. It has to have the operating principles. It has to have all these parameters to it. For 2,000 years in exile, we haven't had any of these parameters. All we've had to live with is this. So we've transformed this level 2 Mishpat and Olam Haba into the operative message of Schar Ve'Onesh. But that's not what it is. From a Tanakh perspective, this is the operative principle message of Schar Ve'Onesh. It's in this world. It's in the hierarchy of all the components of the nation of Israel. For those individuals that fall through the cracks, we have a concept called Olam Haba and the second tier, which explains why Tanakh does not address Olam Haba. It's nowhere in Tanakh except in Sefer Kohelet. The notion of Mishpat in the world to come, the notion of a judgment after this world, does not exist as a theme of discussion in Tanakh, with the exception of Kohelet and a handful of obscure references in Sefer Tehillim. Why? Because Tanakh's focus is primarily here. on building the nation of Israel and all of the components of God's presence in this world. This is Kiddush Hashem. This brings God's presence into the world. This brings the Shekhinah down into the world. This is the mandate for creation. This is the purpose there is on detra for our existence. This is so that there's a fair level playing field. But the goal, ultimately, make no mistake about it, is here, is Gan Eden, is the Beit HaMikdash, is that sense of presence of God's presence in the world that we live in. The goal is not to focus our entire existence on the concept of Olam Haba. So, what it's fascinating to me because the literature, the philosophical literature of the Middle Ages speaks primarily and so heavily about this concept of Olam Haba. Because they had nothing of this. This was all theoretical. So they spent all their energy and all their time and all their focus here. But the world of Tanakh brings us back to here. That's the debate of the Yirei Elokim and the Chacham. That's where we left off. Bezvat Hashem, next week, starting at 8:30, as I said at the beginning of the shir. Next week, for 1 week, we're going to change the time because of the Zion Adar dinner. We're starting at 8:30. We will find ourselves back in the world of an old friend we haven't seen in a long time, the Nehenah. Next week.